Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It's Monday, hour two, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on Fox Sports Radio. And right here on FS1, 15 minutes from now, Trent Dilfer, Chris Broussard later this hour. The O is funny and insightful, Kevin Clark. Great guy for The Ringer. Very, very funny. And Joy Taylor is joining me. I know it's very painful for you, but listen, the Marlins made the playoffs. The Heat made the finals. The Hurricanes, well, they got... That didn't work out.
Well, it wasn't a great Miami sports weekend, but I'm not upset. That was an incredible run by the Heat and a really fun team. We have a bright future. And listen, the Lakers were supposed to win that series.
Kendrick Nunn, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Bam Adebayo, like four foundational. Tyler Hero is going to learn how to play defense eventually, but four guys that you know are going to get better and play well, and they play well together.
And Jimmy loves it there.
Yeah. No, they've done. You know, I was thinking it was so funny yesterday. I'm watching the finals. I'm thinking, what if LeBron would have never left Miami and just stayed there?
What if?
It wouldn't have been as interesting. He's made the league more interesting. Going to Cleveland and winning, coming home was great. And this was great yesterday. Like, it is more interesting when say what you want about Durant going to Golden State, but it created a villain and it made the league more interesting. And going to Brooklyn. Now I want to see what happens to KD and Kyrie in Brooklyn.
Well, the changes make it a whole new story. But LeBron, honestly, this whole entire bubble has just been remarkable. Really, when you think about what LeBron is as a superstar, it's astounding.
It's nothing else like it in the history of sports. Nothing else even close.
He's been in the spotlight since he was 16 years old. And he was like literally made for this. He's brilliant at it.
And the two controversies are he gave a bunch of money to a boys and girls club in Greenwich, Connecticut, and takes up some social causes. Those are the big controversies. It's crazy. I always feel like if you think he's polarizing, it's a you problem. You just wake up too angry if you think LeBron James is polarizing.
He's very discussable, that's for sure.
Yeah, discussable.
But he's polarizing in the way that Tom Brady is polarizing. After a while, you start to hate greatness.
Yeah. It's more on the person hating than it is the person that's hated.
Listen, I was upset when he went back to Cleveland. I can admit that.
Yeah.
But now I'm just at the phase in life where I have to appreciate great things when we have them.
That's right.
LeBron James is one of the greatest to ever play this game. And I'm going to watch and enjoy it.
It's like I remember people fighting Tiger Woods for years. I'm like, this is the 10 greatest years in the history of golf. Why are you fighting it? Just watch it, enjoy it. I miss Tiger being great. There's a million guys you told me that were going to be Tiger, and I'm over all of them. They ate 13 slices of bacon for breakfast. They're not as interesting as Tiger. Here we go. Colin right, Colin wrong.
Where Colin was right.
When Andy Dalton got picked up by the Cowboys, I said, I don't love him as a franchise guy, but he's a great backup. And I don't think there's a huge drop off to Dak. I thought he was very good yesterday. That last drive, 5 plays, under a minute, 72 yards, a 38 and 19 yarder to Michael Gallup, who's really emerging. I thought he looked fantastic. He's a very accurate distributor of the football, and Dallas has a bunch of scores on the outside. So if you're looking for a guy that'll know the playbook, remember, he had other options. He's from the Dallas area. He chose the Cowboys because he wanted to go home. He's a very, very good fit for this team, which is get the ball to Zeke and to Amari and to Michael Gallup and C.D. Lamb and Cedric Wilson. He is a distributor of the football. And when you give him good pieces, he has a history of leading teams to the playoffs.
Where Colin was wrong.
Another crappy blazing 5-1-4. Thank God I had the Vikings last night. Worst start I've ever had in my career. 10 wins, 14 losses, and a tie. I know. I took Atlanta. My problem. Not yours. I've lost the last 7 times I've picked the Falcons. Pathetic. Bad.
Where Colin was right.
Shocker. The NFL drive of the year was Russell Wilson. Do you know he not only leads the NFL in passer rating, he has 6 more touchdown passes than any other quarterback. Now, think of all the great receiving corps in the NFL. His isn't one of them. And he's got 6 more touchdown passes than everybody else. And remember, he has a middle-of-the-pack offensive line and a defensive head coach. His record in 1-score games is over 80% winning. He converted a 4th-and-goal and a 4th-and-10. I've said it before, Mahomes is a greater natural talent. Russell Wilson is the best football player on earth, and his ability intellectually and emotionally to play poorly all game, and then when he had to be great, dial it in and be great is what separates him.
Where Colin was wrong.
I did not think the Lakers could win a championship. They have no dependable third scorer. In my life, I've never seen a team win a championship without a dependable third scorer. I did think Rondo was terrific yesterday. I think he had his first five or six shots. They're the only veteran team that did not underachieve in the bubble. It surprises me. I do think it was a break the Clippers lost, but in the NBA, I've got a history. You got to have a third guy you can rely on. I mean, remember, Pippen and Jordan had Tony Kukoc or a Ron Harper or a somebody. I mean, game to game, it was Kuzma. I will say this, KCP, I'm in. I thought KCP had a very good Western Conference final and a very good final. Long, athletic, LeBron likes him, and he's never afraid to take a big shot.
Where Colin was right.
We said Joe Burrow is going to get rocked. He got sacked seven times yesterday. I said he's their number one athlete. He's not only been sacked the most in the league, he's been pressured the most in the league. He's been hit the most in the league. And yesterday there were people on the internet saying, just bench him, get him out of this. It was not just that Cincinnati's not good. My number one concern was he's going to get hurt. I saw this with Andrew Luck. The Bengals' offensive line is bad, and it's precisely what we thought. He's going to be Tony Romo. Run around, make plays, and after about 2 years, 3 years, he's going to start developing injuries because nobody can withstand that. Nobody can withstand getting hit that much in the NFL.
Where Colin was wrong.
The Steelers are 4-0. They allowed Travis Fulgham to dominate them. I don't understand it. But I will say this. Nobody drafts wide receivers better than Pittsburgh. This rookie Chase Claypool from Notre Dame, good God, he's unbelievable. This organization, in the history of the NFL, New England can't draft a wide receiver to save their life. The Steelers can't miss on a wide receiver to save theirs. And Big Ben's been terrific. Joy and I both didn't know. 10 TDs, one pick, 110 passer rating. They're for real. Now, again, there are other teams I like more. I still like Baltimore more. But Pittsburgh's schedule's got a lot of W's on it. You start looking at that schedule, it's got a lot of W's on it. And if you play defense like they do, and you can be this dynamic at wide receiver in 2020, you're a playoff team.
Where Colin was right.
I didn't pick him over the weekend, but I remember when the Carolina Panthers moved off Ron Rivera and Cam Newton, and I said, I like it. It's time. Teddy Bridgewater, I've always been a fan of. Matt Rhule, the league is changing to an offensive-minded league, and Carolina's done a nice job. They're getting better every week. Yesterday, Matt Rhule out-coached Dan Quinn. Teddy Bridgewater, what a shock. Just completes the ball, doesn't get in trouble, and they're doing it without Christian McCaffrey. I didn't pick him yesterday, but I said, right now, they're tied for first in their division. I said they're going to be the biggest spoiler in the league. They're going to make a lot of people's Sundays a nightmare. And if you watch them from week one to now, they're getting better.
Where Colin was wrong.
Jimmy Garoppolo, I can't unsee that. Put your house up for sale. Listen, everybody has bad games. Patrick Mahomes can struggle. Russell Wilson can struggle. But Jimmy Garoppolo is struggling to make easy reads. He threw into a cover two yesterday. He's 29 years old. He's not a kid. He's not 24. He's not. Look at this throw into a cover two. And it's on the inside shoulder. That's a horrible, unforgivable throw for a 29-year-old. I like him, but when you get benched at halftime for CJ Beathard, I think it sends a signal. Maybe it's his ankle. I'm not saying injuries don't matter. I'm not. But I like him more than you do, and I saw some eye-rolling and head-shaking from Kyle Shanahan, and this is the kind of game coaches do not forget.
Where Colin was wrong.
I thought Tom Herman would get Texas back. He is now 18-12 in the Big 12, and that's not a good football conference. I mean, Oklahoma benched their quarterback, and he still lost. Back-to-back weeks, he's lost to rivals Oklahoma and TCU. They needed unbelievable heroics from their quarterback, Sam Ellinger, who's a gutty kid. I really like him. But the Big 12, 18-12 in the SEC is one thing. 18-12 after, you know, in a year four in the Big 12 when you're in Texas, is simply not good enough. I don't know how Texas, with all the athletes in that state and all the good high school football coaching, how can they be this bad defensively? How can they be this bad defensively? They just don't get pressure on quarterbacks. Colin right, Colin wrong. Trent Dilfer is around the corner. We'll ask him about Jimmy Garoppolo. Because, man, he's 29 years old. He's not 24. I'll give you a break. First two, 3 years in this league, I'll give you a break. But he's been around, and he's had Belichick and Kyle Shanahan. He's had not good coaching. He's had exceptional coaching, and he's making mistakes you just can't make. Trent Dilfer around the corner.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
See the check engine light go on? Don't freak out. Get carshield.com. Code Herd, the warranty for when your warranty runs out. Carshield.com. Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl, a Pro Bowl, played in the NFL for a decade and a half. He is now joining us now. He's the head coach at Lipscomb Academy High School in Nashville, Tennessee. They won a football game again this weekend. So, listen, I cannot think you're a great franchise quarterback, but love you as a backup. And I think Andy Dalton to me is the classic distributor of the football. If you got weapons, there's a lot of Kirk Cousins here. He's a good distributor if you give him weapons. I don't see a massive drop-off of the Cowboys offensively. Am I wrong there?
No, he's a better version than me. he's a talented kid. I really like Andy a lot. He was in a tough situation in Cincinnati at the end especially. He still has a lot of juice left in the tank. He's twitchy. He's a good leader. He's a tough guy. He's played a lot of football, been in a lot of big games. I don't think the drop-off is that significant. Now you lose a lot of the intangible stuff that Zach has, Dak Prescott has with his leadership, with his, you can tell by the reaction around the league, his teammates, other teams, how much people respect him. You lose a little bit with Dak's mobility and legs, but I think Andy can handle this offense well. They're talented on offense. You can extend plays. Keep the play alive with his athleticism. And again, he's seen a lot of football. He's played a lot of football. He's played a lot of critical downs. I think all those things will serve him very well in the NFC least. I mean, the division's so bad that you don't have to be great to win it. And I think the Cowboys can be just good enough to win that division with Andy Dalton.
Listen, I get analytics. I was saying this, like in the NBA. I understand the revolution for the three ball. I get it. But in the last two finals, I've seen Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron, and AD on twos dominate the sport. I get going for it on fourth and two, but I thought to myself, wet field, wet ball, and Russell Wilson. I want a field goal. I want to lead by eight. I've seen Russ do this 10 times. What did you make of the call to go for it? I know analytics loves it.
I hated it. I thought, kick the field goal, go up by eight. It's a chip shot for an NFL kicker. Worst you're going to do is go into overtime. And I just, you know, you're playing that game where if you don't get it, which they didn't, now you're giving Russell the ball with a chance to beat you instead of just a chance to tie you. I didn't like the call at all. But again, regardless of the call, my jaw just dropped again watching Russell play and watching him operate in that situation and watching the critical moment plays that he made, his ability to – The touchdown pass, especially with the free rusher in his face, and he kind of drops it down sidearm to hit Metcalf in the end zone was incredible. The fourth and 10, the sluggo stop, so to speak, the back shoulder on the sluggo was incredible. I'm running out of ways to explain Russell Wilson's magic. He's an incredible football player. He carries that team in big moments. Every time he gets the ball in that situation, you think he's going to score. So if you're Mike Zimmer and you're making that decision, well, if you think he's going to score, well, then make him score and then have to go get the two-point conversion just to get you into overtime
Yep. Instead
of beat you.
Yeah. So I want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. I like him. And maybe it's injury. But when I watched the body language yesterday of Kyle Shanahan, that body language was, you know, the parent that's about done giving their kid a little extra cash to go hang out at night. Like, I'm over it. I do wonder if that's the kind of game that Kyle can't unsee down the road.
Yeah, I also interpreted it this way. It was the, gosh, why did I let him play? It's why did I let him speed up the rehab? Why did I let him play in this game? You know, maybe rest him another week. Because from jump start, Jimmy didn't look right. You know what I mean? He didn't have that decisiveness in his game. He wasn't moving great. A lot of the errors he made, there was a little bit of a, I don't want to call it a flinch, that being scared, but a lack of confidence in his body. The ball wasn't coming out of his hand well, which leads me to believe he didn't practice a lot leading up to this. So to me, I interpreted Kyle's body language as, why'd I let him play this week? Why'd I let it happen this week when I could have waited another week? That was my interpretation of it. And they're married to Jimmy Garoppolo. They're not dating anymore. They're married. So I think you have to handle each decision with that understanding that this is a long-term relationship and you can't overreact to one stinker.
So you dealt with some of this when I covered you in Tampa. There's a point with Joe Burrow. There's one thing to get hit. There's another to get hit 30% more than the rest of the league. And it reminds me of Tony Romo. We remember Romo's last year when he had a good O-line, but for most of it in Dallas, it was a mess. And Tony was just running for his life for about 7-8 years. And then we just, and by the end of it, he just physically fell apart. You can only get hit by 275-pound guys that many times. And I wonder with Joe Burrow, would you sit there if you ran the operation and think, you know, there are going to be games, I'm just going to take him out in the third quarter. We can't sustain a pass protection, because how long can you get hit? He's on pace to get hit 80 times this year.
Yeah, it becomes a trust issue. It's really hard to trust yourself as a player when you don't trust the people in front of you. You don't trust the play calling because the people in front of you, you don't trust your, you know, you don't trust the whole thing. And it concerns me with young quarterbacks that play off jump start with poor offensive lines is they may be super talented. They may be gritty and tough and have all the stuff you want, but they'll start to lose their trust and their belief in the people around them, but more importantly, themselves. So that's the danger. And I don't think that's going to happen to a Joe Burrow, but I do think it's something they need to at least address. And one thing they can do is they can't go get new offensive linemen, but you can change your schemes a little bit. I might be more run driven, might be more 6-7 man protection driven. I add some people to protection to protect them a little bit more. They're obviously not going to be world beaters this year as a football team. So maybe this entire year is about developing Joe Burrow, creating that confidence, not letting him lose trust in the system and the people in front of him. But to me, that's the danger ranger. Is you see a young quarterback, David Carr was a great example in Houston. David Carr is a very talented player, goes to Houston, isn't protected. 2-3 years later, he no longer trusts the system, the people around him, or himself. I think I've seen that happen to a lot of quarterbacks, myself being one of them as well, that's really the thing that scares me the most. So you can handle that with your schemes, with your protection schemes, how you call a game to make sure that's not an issue for Joe Burrow.
I want to go back. I want to talk about the Dak injury, because obviously it makes you just sick to your stomach, and he's tough as a, you know, cheap steak. He's a tough kid. But I do wonder, you know, it's funny about life that he got offered about $110 million and he said no, he rolled the dice on himself. And I don't, you know, Jerry Jones is not going to be guilted into paying somebody what he doesn't think he should pay him. But when I about 3 minutes after he got hurt, I thought, oh, he should have taken the contract. You know, do players think about that stuff when they get hurt? Like, oh, I had this big fat contract in front of me and didn't take it. Do you think that popped into his head?
Absolutely. It's a business. I mean, these are professional athletes. They're playing because they're very good at football, but they're playing because they can create a generational type income. And when something as catastrophic as that happens, it's human nature to start wondering if you should have accepted the contract. I think all professional athletes in the midst of hard times, their contract becomes part of that emotional conflict that they have. Now, I think this one's going to work out well for both sides. But I can almost guarantee you that as Dak sitting in that ambulance, as the picture shown, that part of his thought process is, okay, what does this mean long term for me and my contract?
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, I have a fundamental question about this, and it's interesting. Belichick's a brilliant guy, but they really struggle drafting perimeter players. They really struggled with it. They struggle with offensive players. They haven't had a Pro Bowler since Gronk. Pittsburgh, on the other hand, there's got to be a scout somewhere in this operation. They found another unbelievable wide receiver. And I wonder, when you were in the league, there were teams that just can, like, they just figure out positions. Pittsburgh, in my lifetime, Trent, is it the general manager? Is it a scout regionally? I watched them yesterday and I'm like, they never miss on wide receiver. Or is it Big Ben? Was it Bradshaw? How do you explain their ability to just, it's a factory. It's a wide receiver factory. Explain it to me.
Getting people in the right lanes doing what they do best. Too often in the NFL, you have one person that's the overall voice speaking into the draft process at every position when that person may not know every position well. He might be great with bigs. He might be great with quarterbacks. He might be great with runners, but maybe he's not good with perimeter guys. Maybe he's not good with secondary guys. I think putting your personnel team together, you need to find guys that are experts in certain lanes and certain position groups. They need to have a track record with evaluating those players, both from the high school, college, to pro level. I think a lot of these guys are tracking these guys all the way back to high school and seeing their progression and how they developed as high school perimeter guys into college, what they're learning, and then what you're looking for. I think a lot of it's system fit. You know, it's not every big perimeter guy fits every system. The Steelers do an incredible job of finding guys that fit their system. They do what they do very well. So I think that's the overall thing. I think you need to put your team together in such a way that you trust the people you've put in their lanes to evaluate certain positions, and you trust your input based on their track record.
By the way, Cleveland was interesting yesterday. I thought Baker played his best half of football in the NFL, and then I thought in the second half he reverted back to Baker, where he started kind of got out of his little lane a little bit, and it's funny because I do think it showed. Under control, he's one quarterback. Pressured, forced out, he's another one. And I wonder how you reconcile those. What is Cleveland's coaching staff thinking this morning watching Baker's first and second halves?
Well, they need to evaluate the numbers. We crunched him this morning. He's a much, much, much more effective quarterback when he plays under center, which is unique. Puts his back to the defense, play action. He's more successful. I think you can control him more that way. You can force him on rhythm when you play under center better than when you play in the gun. The only downfall of the gun for rhythm guys is that you lose your rhythm. You lose your timing. It's very hard to replicate the timing in a shotgun that you have under center. So as a coach, if you want to dial in the quarterback's rhythm, if you want to micromanage it, for lack of a better term, you can put them under center. You can call certain actions, certain dropbacks, certain plays where you can dictate his rhythm better than him catching the ball, taking some sort of a three-step drop, jumping up and down. The pocket feels different. The space is different. So if you look at the numbers, he plays his best when he's under center in a play-action mode. When he gets a little frenetic, when it gets a little crazy, is when he gets back in the gun.
Yeah. Great seeing you, Trent Dilfer, Lipscomb Academy head football coach in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. Good seeing you, bud.
Thanks, brother.
Appreciate it. Chris Broussard stopping by before the end of the hour on the Lakers championship. There is it 17th as a franchise? Is that it for the Lakers? Yeah, I lose count after a while. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
The Raiders ended their 7-game losing streak in Kansas City yesterday. Wow. Upset win. Chiefs jumped out to an early 14-3 lead, but the Raiders tied it up at 24 by halftime, and after a scoreless third quarter, the Raiders scored 16 unanswered points and held on to the victory 40-32. This is the Chiefs' first loss since November 10th of 2019.
Derek Carr threw the ball down the field. That's been the big knock on him. He aired it out yesterday.
Henry Ruggs looked amazing.
He had a great catch up the right sideline.
You know, this was Kansas City was due for a loss like this.
And also, I think Kansas City has a big... they played a lot of big emotional games. I think people in Vegas liked the Raiders in this spot.
It's also a divisional game.
Yeah.
So it's not a gimme.
Raiders can score. That's not the issue with Las Vegas. They can put points on the board.
Mahomes did have a bad interception late, but overall this was one of those divisional games where, you know, the Raiders showed up and just showed out. I mean, Tyreek Hill looked amazing earlier in the game. He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But Henry Ruggs and Waller.
Their weapons are, I'll tell you what, say what you want. Mike Mayock can draft offensive guys. That's all I know. Because they're all, that Jacobs continues to be a horse. I mean, just they give you receivers, tight end, backs. They got two of everything.
Yeah, they all had impressive games. This was the 8-point loss was the largest margin of defeat in Patrick Mahomes' career as a starter.
All right. He's good.
He's so good. So Joe Burrow had a rough outing yesterday against the Ravens.
Brutal.
Setting a rookie record by throwing at least 300 yards in three straight games. He was held to 183 passing yards and no touchdowns against Baltimore. He also took 7 sacks in the 27-3 loss, bringing his season total to 22, which is the highest in the league. He has taken 50 hits and been pressured 65 times, which are both the most in the league. He's on pace to be sacked 70 times in 2020. The record is David Carr, who took 76 sacks in the 2002 season.
Well, here's the good news. It's a good year. NFL draft, there's some really good offensive linemen. You've got excellent receivers. You got Joe Mixon, Burrow, and excellent receivers. T. Higgins has been terrific. So you know what you don't need. What you do need is offensive linemen, and you can attack it in free agency. This is a team that, the Jets have a million problems. If you look at Cincinnati and go, shore up the O-line, they'd be a much more competitive football team. Next year, if you upgrade two offensive line spots.
If their whole focus is in free agency in the draft is not the offensive line, Joe Burrow should refuse to play next year.
Yeah.
This is insane. I mean, we knew this was going to be bad, but you don't want a situation like Andrew Luck where you have the number one overall pick,
yeah.
You get a generational talent, a clear starting franchise quarterback, and then you do nothing to help him succeed.
I think I watch him and I'm like, they're okay everywhere else. They're actually exceptional on the perimeter. Burrow and those receivers are really good players.
I mean, nobody can be successful in that situation.
No.
He has the most sacks this season, 22. Carson Wentz, 19, and Deshaun Watson, 17.
And we make fun of Deshaun Watson's protection. He's got 30% more sacks.
Yes. Yeah. So, the Red River Showdown this year was one to remember.
Crazy, wild game.
Really fun game. Oklahoma was in control late in the fourth quarter, but Sam Ellinger brought Texas back from a 14-point deficit to send the game into overtime. Both teams exchanged touchdowns in the first two overtime periods, but missed a pair of field goals in the third to keep the game going. Oklahoma then scored another touchdown in the fourth overtime and intercepted Ellinger on the next possession to seal the win, 53-45. Really fun game. Texas also got to Sam a lot for the second straight year, 6 sacks and 7 quarterback hurries, so they made things difficult on him. Also, Spencer Rattler was benched in the first half,
but
came
then he
back
had that great throw late.
Incredible game. So clearly just needed a little reset there. Mordecai came in for him. I mean, you just couldn't take your eyes off this game. It was everything that you wanted.
There's 3 college games every year. Auburn, Alabama is my favorite. The intensity of the South is absurd. That's my favorite game. Michigan, Ohio State is my second favorite, and this is my third. And it's become, and this is just the Big 12, it's become Canadian Football League in America. It's always a wild, crazy, it feels like it's a scoring fest every year.
It was. I mean, it really kind of felt like both teams were like just kind of daring the other one to win it. Like no one was really playing with the necessary urgency to win the game. But it was a really fun watch. And Texas is getting kind of interesting because, I mean, I don't know what else Ellinger could have done. I mean, he carried that team to the end of it.
I don't know if he's a pro player. He's a great college player. He's got a Tebow quality where he's just like elevates. He throws a good enough ball, I guess, to be a pro. But he's one of those guys who is a college hero, but I don't know if it transfers to the next level.
I think he could be successful in the right situation.
Yeah,
but
he did.
I mean, he was guts in that game because he carried that team.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
You know, I'm sitting there watching the Lakers last night, and then I've got Russell Wilson on the other TV, and I got LeBron on this one. And they're probably two of my, along with Brady, my favorite athletes in America right now. And there is just something to say. I asked Jimmy Johnson, the Hall of Fame football coach, once. I said, you know, you had Troy Aikman, explain leadership. And Jimmy Johnson said, I can't. I don't know what it is. I know it when I see it, but I don't know what it is. And I kind of feel like that with Russell Wilson. I can't really explain it, but it's almost like he's a race car driver. And the last 5 laps, his heart rate goes down. And I just, that's innate. I don't know if it's some sort of conviction from upstairs. I don't know what it is. Russell Wilson, he's more under control and more focused. And I watched LeBron James in that game yesterday, and I mean opening tip, he was so dialed in and so energized. And I'll talk to Chris Broussard about that coming up. He'll join us next live.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
If you're not ready to give up, want to feel more energized, strong driven, check it out, mdriveformen.com, only supplement I take. There's a lot of discussions for years about who's the greatest of all time, and I want to go to my friend Chris Broussard, Fox Sports NBA analyst, who's joining me now live. I'm going to put it this way. How about if I just said this? Michael is a better version of Kobe, and LeBron is a better version of Magic. And that means Michael and LeBron are 1-2. We can all argue over it, but their games are not the same. For a long time, I thought Magic was number two to Michael. LeBron's a better version of Magic, and Michael is a better version of Kobe. Is that fair?
That's very fair. I actually would agree with that. That's right on the money. Kobe was exactly like Michael Jordan, except not quite as good. He was like a facsimile of Jordan, but not as good as the original. LeBron is not as much like Magic as Kobe is like Michael, but he's very similar. He's a pass-first guy, but not quite the passer that Magic was. I mean, Magic was an out-of-this-world passer, much better than LeBron and anybody else that ever played the game. But LeBron is a better scorer than Magic. He's more athletic. He's a better defender. But they both made their teammates better. Obviously, Magic had great talent with him from day one with Kareem and then James Worthy later on and other great players. But even when Kareem was done, Magic carried that team to the finals.
Yeah.
You know, with Vlade Divac and some other guys that weren't, you know, Hall of Fame type players other than James Worthy. So they're very similar in that. But we still have to answer the question. We can't stop it there. Okay, you want to pull a Jeff Van Gundy and say, well, one has a better career, but one's a better player. One's the GOAT. No, we still have to settle it. And right now, it was great last night what LeBron did. I would take nothing away from him. It edges him a little bit closer, but he's still number two, and Michael Jordan is number one.
By the way, though, isn't it more impressive? It's one thing, and I'll make this argument. Michael needed Scottie and Phil. LeBron just needs a ball. He won with a wing. He won with a point guard. He won with a big. He won with four different coaches. Is that Michael needed things to work, or he couldn't even get to the finals? LeBron doesn't need anything.
Well, I have often said if LeBron had had a historic coach, and all the guys he's compared to had either Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, or Greg Popovich. LeBron didn't have any of those guys. If he had had one of those, I do think he'd have more championships. And maybe then the discussion would be reversed and he'd be viewed as the GOAT by most people. But let's remember this too. Phil Jackson was not Phil Jackson when he went to Michael Jordan. Okay, he was just some guy who had coached the Albany Patroons and was a favorite of Jerry Krause. That's it. So Michael Jordan played a large role in making Phil Jackson who he was. And then once Jordan gave him the sign off and said, he's the only coach I want to play for. Now that makes it easier for Phil to coach Shaq and Kobe and you know, guys going forward because he's got that respect and credibility. So I also say this. I've always said that LeBron, even more than Michael, LeBron could take a lesser group of players and lift them higher. But LeBron's had trouble getting those teams over the hump. When he's won championships, he's been stacked. I mean, in Miami, he had two Hall of Famers the first championship, three Hall of Famers the second championship as teammates. Of course, he won it with Kyrie and Love. Kyrie will be a Hall of Famer probably if he stays healthy. Love, maybe. And then this time he's got Anthony Davis and Rajon Rondo might be a Hall of Famer. So let's not act like LeBron has just carried anybody to championships. He can carry anybody to deep playoff runs, occasionally the finals, but to win it, he's needed big time help too.
We used to kind of roll our eyes when people would say LeBron's going to play with Bronny. He's going to play with his son. And now I'm like, he's going to play through his son's first free agency. when you look at Father Time and LeBron, he's going to be the first or second best. He's going to be the best player in the league next year, right? Like, we're acknowledging that, right? Next year will be the best player in the league again.
He certainly starts the season as that. You know, I mean, we'll see. Does he diminish as time goes on? But, yes, when the season starts, LeBron James will be the best player, no question about it.
Wow. So let's go back to the Kareem and Magic thing. Do you think, you know, you have a lot of sources in the league. I do think LeBron's really smart about scaling. Like Tom Brady chose Tampa Bay because they had more weapons. He didn't have to carry them. I do think, you know, I wonder if LeBron sits down with Frank Vogel and Rob Pelinka this offseason. And LeBron's never been a guy that ducks games. But do you think the conversations will begin like, listen, AD can play 76, I'm going to play 70, that LeBron at least starts to understand? Because I think the bubble showed me one thing, that when LeBron doesn't have to be in an airplane constantly, his energy is through the roof. I've never seen him this energized in 5 or 6 years. And I wonder, I guess what I'm asking you is, did the bubble perhaps, because LeBron's a thinking man's player, does LeBron look at this bubble and think, man, when I don't have to be on planes, my energy is, I got more energy than Jimmy Butler at the end.
Right.
I wonder if this bubble, LeBron sits back there in his rubber ducky in his swimming pool out in the, you know, Pacific Palisades, and he's like, you know, maybe I should start playing 62 games. Seriously, I wonder if LeBron thinks about that.
No, look, I don't think he'll ever do the load management Kawhi style. But I could see 70 games,
yeah,
you know, somewhere between 70 and 76 games. I think that makes a lot of sense. I also think, Colin, one thing I noticed during the bubble and especially in the finals, LeBron James was great in the system that the Lakers were running, but he wasn't the system. And for the bulk of his career, he has been the system where he is creating everything. He's getting the assist, the bucket, or the hockey assist. And this year, he was more playing within the system. AD was, you know, dominant at times. Rajon Rondo was running the offense. There were possessions when LeBron didn't touch the ball. And I think that's great. I actually think that if LeBron had been a part of the system throughout his career, he'd probably have more championships because it's tougher for other guys that can really do their thing to play when LeBron's the system. And you just got to kind of fit in around him. But my point is, I brought that up because I think that will be less taxing on him too. If he plays this way going forward, he's the point guard, he's running the show, he's getting everybody involved, but he's everything doesn't revolve around LeBron. They run through AD. When Rondo's in there, LeBron can play off the ball. That will put less strain on him physically and mentally. And I think that'll help him stay elite for a longer period of time as well.
So you have Michael 1, LeBron 2. Is Magic your third best player ever?
Kareem 3, Magic 4. And I saw something a while ago about Kawhi being 5, but I can't go there.
That was on my show. All right, I got LeBron and Michael tied at 1. I got Magic 3.
Ooh.
I got Kareem 4, Wilt 5, Kobe 6, Bird 7, Akeem 8, Shaq 9, Duncan 10. Did I miss anybody? I didn't see Oscar Robertson play. That's not fair.
That's a good 10. That's a good 10. So you got, you know, I don't like leaving this show with a tie between Jordan and LeBron. I mean, come on.
You know, I didn't see Oscar Robertson play or Bill Russell, so it's hard for me to make a judgment. I know Russell's in everybody's 10, but...
Yeah, you didn't have Russell in there. The 11 rings are crazy. I know he only averaged 15 points and 22 rebounds, 44% shooting from the floor. So he wasn't... His individual numbers outside of the rebounds and blocks aren't crazy, but the 11 rings is hard to turn down.
Okay, you got...
I would have to put Russell in the top 10.
All right. I put Akeem 1 slot ahead of Shaq because I saw them play each other, and Akeem gave Shaq fits.
Ooh.
I know. It sounds crazy.
That was a young Shaq.
It was not pretty. Shaq acknowledged, I can't cover him. Akeem gave Shaq problems. All right, we got to get out of here. I just sit and talk this thing all day. He looks so professional. Chris Broussard, we'll bring him on. You'll talk to us soon. Thanks, buddy.
All right, my man.
He and Rob Parker have a great radio show on Fox Sports Radio. Yeah, I was jotting things down listening to Chris. Yeah. Michael and LeBron, they're just, I think they've just separated from everybody. They've separated from the field.
I think everyone's top 10 list kind of varies. Once you get past the top two, it's a matter of preference, who you watched, what kind of style
you like.
I just think
comparing Michael and LeBron is like, it's like comparing chocolate ice cream and cottage cheese. They're both dairy.
Ugh, cottage cheese is awful.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're both dairy, but
like
they're
like comparing
different.
Chocolate ice cream and like
yogurt.
No, like chocolate cake. Like, what's better? They're both amazing.
I think They're both basketball players, but I look at Michael and I don't see anything resembling LeBron.
Okay, so you're saying they're both different.
They're both in the same industry, but they're but they're just so. I look at Michael and I see Kobe. I look at LeBron and I see a stronger version of Magic. I don't see LeBron and Michael as the same guy.